I felt that I had to behave in that way.
Welcome to this episode of the Marketing Development Podcast. Today, I am joined by Pascal Fintoni, and we talk about how to set yourself up as an expert in your niche. And then, as he is a video marketing expert, I then dove into a whole discussion about how to engage your customers and your clients with video marketing. So really, this episode is two in one. I really hope you enjoy it. Welcome to this episode of the Marketing Development Podcast, and you are joining me and my wonderful guest for the show, Pascal Fintoni. Pascal, welcome to the show.
Oh, thank you very much for having me today. Do you know what? This is Friday afternoon. This is the best way to end a very busy week.
It is. I'm on my way from here to a place where I can get beer. So, I'm with you on that. It's a great way to end the week. Pascal and I have, we've been involved in a similar kind of circle for a while. And I know we've been to a number of similar events, but I don't think we've actually, put hand to hand and sort of shaken hands and done that kind of thing. But Pascal, do you want to give a brief introduction of who you are, where you're from, and what you do?
Well, thank you very much. So, yes, I've been involved in online marketing since the mid-90s, which makes me a granddad in the eyes and ears of some of my delegates now. I was actually around when website first began, and I became passionate about what you can do in terms of engaging an audience via the internet very, very quickly, and chose to specialize in that since then. I've been working my way through, the ladder, as one does, from a marketing assistant, or the way to marketing director, and then launched my own consultancy business in 2011. And I'm still doing that, although now I'm more involved in speaking and kind of high-end consultancy. I was recently appointed as content and marketing director for one of my clients as well. So now I'm kind of part-time employee, part-time self-employed, which is rather odd, but interesting one to do. And I also have a passion for moving images, and a passion that I tried and failed miserably to keep hidden from most of my clients in terms of video and film production. And I took kind of the plunge in terms of becoming an educator and consultant in video marketing around 2013. And my role has been to help businesses build the best possible online reputation and get access to the best customers for them.
Okay, that's obviously like a whirlwind tour that has been condensed into a few sentences. So if we just sort of backpedal a little bit, go back in that time machine, you obviously worked your way up the sort of slippery slope of management through your marketing roles. So what was it that sort of made you get to the point whereby you were successful in terms of employment in a marketing position, but you wanted to go out and do that thing on your own?
I wanted to be able to spend as long as was needed with my customers, not just what the quote or the proposal had said. So, and I don't mean to say that back then when I was an employee, we didn't do very good work. We did. I was very proud of what we achieved. We created new services, new training courses and so on. But without realizing, we were just chasing work to be able to pay wages and the bills, and we didn't always listen to whether customers needed properly. And I didn't think that we were always giving the best service. But that came to me after once I started to work as a consultant and was on my own in particular. I realized that I was able to be more creative about how I might train or mentor somebody, and more importantly, I could stay as long as was required, so long as obviously it was within the remit of the role. And that's something that I suspect many of your listeners are coming across as well, this ability to devise a solution or a strategy that is exactly what the customer needs, not what the business has concocted a few years ago, and now we have to sell more of the same.
Okay, that makes sense. And that kind of goes back into your interest, I suppose, in engaging the audience through the internet, which was the phrase that you said earlier. Have you sort of packaged that, I suppose, or did you start looking at that from a kind of audience perspective or from a sort of pure consultant perspective? Was it copywriting? How did you kind of position yourself when you first started your business?
So when I first started my business, I was very clear about what I would enjoy doing and what I would be happy to accept as a challenge. Mm-hmm. So I was very clear that I wanted to work with business owner managers. I wanted to work at that senior level and be a critical friend to pull together the right strategy for the business. And therefore, the packages that I kind of created were all around the facilitation of that high-level thinking and capturing those ideas into a practical plan. I made the decision from day one that I would never get involved in implementation. So I would be happy to maybe recommend somebody that would then, you know, apply themselves to be the copywriter or the web designer or the mm-hmm. SEO agency and so on and so forth. My role was very much to devise the right strategy that would support the sales function, really. That was what I was looking to do. And within that, I was helping my customers reconnect with who they were as individuals and businesses, reconnect with their value proposition in terms of the product and services, and sometimes actually reconnect with who their customers truly were. Because for many of them, they were just chasing the next purchase without necessarily a clear idea of the audience. And once that was kind of in place, then I was involved in the content strategy again. And I would go as far as training individuals to create their own content, and video a bit was a part of that. But as soon as the question was, oh, we're running out of time, can you please do it for us? I suppose, Pete, I can say no very easily. And that's because I didn't do so in the early years and days of what I was doing. And that's something that I regretted always. When it felt that I should have said no, but because I felt obligated or didn't want to offend somebody, I said yes. It was utter misery every single time.
You know, that by far is one of the biggest lessons I've learned in business. So I've run two businesses. There's been mentions of these in previous podcasts. I've run two of them, and the big mistake I made with the first one was not being able to say no. And the second biggest the second thing I learned was charging what you're actually worth. The whole idea of starting out a business with such a laser focus is, to me, that's inspirational. Because, you know, when I was starting my businesses and I was thinking, well, hang on a minute, somebody's willing to give me money here and I've got bills to pay at the end of the month. It doesn't really matter what they're asking me to do. I'm just going to say I'm going to do it. But actually having that focus, having that discipline in order to say no to certain things and be focused on what exactly it is you do ultimately makes your work better quality and makes your life more enjoyable because you're doing the stuff that you want to do.
Absolutely. And I didn't appreciate it until maybe a few years later, but that helped. The reputation was built much swifter as well, because you have that, you know, it's an easier way for people to remember who you are and remember what you do because you've said no, actually, which they don't hear that often. And it's a very polite no, don't get me wrong, Pete. And I would always say, listen, if that's really important, I can look at my LinkedIn profiles or my, you know, or my business cards, and I will find someone for you, but I will then show you how to go through due diligence and procure well. So just because this individual is known to Pascal doesn't mean that they'd be good enough for you. You have to take them through their paces. So for me to be able to support the senior management around strategy, then train staff to implement those strategies was very, very important. But I suppose it's also because I was from the other side where I didn't have, you know, on occasion as an employee, that clarity of the strategy. I didn't have always supportive employers. So I know what it feels like when you work in the dark and you do your very best day in, day out, and you have no idea whether or not this is actually making a difference to the business. So I was able through my work to tell those stories, and people, I think, did appreciate that.
That's brilliant. That's brilliant. And yeah, I've worked in marketing agencies where we haven't got our own marketing and our own kind of direction correct. Yeah. And we were just messing around trying to meet the bills every month. There's so many things you've said already that I've just been sort of nodding and smiling at the screen saying, yeah, I've been there. So if we fast forward on a little bit further to sort of getting towards more the current day,
yep.
There's a number of consultants, in inverted commas, that I've met that maybe started similar time as you, sort of, you know, 8 to 10 to 12 years ago, and as their business develops, they start to lose that consultant badge, in inverted commas, and build themselves more as agencies. And then they support themselves with freelancers and you know, other temporary workers and that kind of thing. But what intrigued me about you, Pascal, was that you've sort of held and owned that consultant brand, haven't you?
Yeah.
So do you want to sort of take us through why you've sort of stayed with that and what that means to you?
I think there's two reasons. Is when you are the consultant, the critical friend, your relationship is deeper and longer in general, because people are not buying commodities or buying simply the task that you're going to complete for them. And I suppose I'm a little selfish. I want to enjoy my work, and I want to actually my clients to feel that gentle peer pressure that, oh, Pascal's coming back next week, we better get on with it, he's going to give us a hard time. And was when a client uses an agency, they tend to just, well, this is a task that I could have done, or this is a task that I don't have much respect for, I'm going to get somebody else to do it for me, and I might not even be that involved. And I'm describing a situation that comes across as being very unkind to professionals out there, but after 25 years, I would say that's the majority of what I hear back from agencies, which clients are tricky, not all, but you know, they can be tricky because they're not fully engaged. And back to what I was saying a moment ago, Peter, I'm just a little too selfish. I want to truly engage a client. And the other thing as well about the agency model, that is one of the reasons I didn't go ahead with it, is that I want to be able to change my method of working or my packages very, very swiftly.
Yep.
And with an agency, it's a little more involved. It can be done, for sure. Back to your example, that means you need to find a new set of freelancers, or you need to start to retrain your staff because you have changed your approach to your service. And that's something that I just felt was just not going to be one that I would enjoy doing.
Yeah, that makes that does make complete sense. And I know from previous experience. What back in an old agency I used to work in, the MD, he was absolutely sold on the idea that he had to surround himself with consultants. So we had in our board meeting, I mean, it was a bit like a sort of funny lineup, because we'd have all of the key directors were in the room, but then there'd be like seven consultants sitting around him at one end of the table, and it was sort of had this kind of weird kind of royal kind of hierarchy about it. But having you've mentioned it twice now, that role of the critical friend.
Sure.
That I think is by far an easier role to take if you are an individual going into a company rather than an agency, in inverted commas, that's then trying to work with a company. It's more of like a person to business relationship rather than a business to business relationship, if you see what I mean.
That's true. And even if you were to go for the agency model, they would still ask for you anyway.
Yeah.
I see that when some of my clients do use agencies, and they would much favor dealing with Michael or Sally than second in command, even though they're very competent. So you're back to this idea of, because ultimately what you and I do, we need to put ourselves into a position of trust, and that takes a bit of time, but that takes obviously a bit of communication skills and so on. And my work sometimes involves, you know, one-to-one, one-to-few, one-to-many sessions to be able to actually get people on board with either the ideas I'm going to suggest or the practices that I want them to try out for the first time. That takes an enormous amount of diplomacy, calculating, timing, and so on and so forth, which you can do much better as a consultant with a small number of clients than you can as an agency. And I suppose for me, the agency model, although I have friends who, you know, have that and they are very successful, and I love the work that they do, is going back to this idea, I suppose deep down I'm perhaps fearful of falling back into the trap of doing work or chasing work to pay the bills and wages.
Yep.
And that's maybe more offending on my part than the agency model.
Mm. No, I understand that. And I think it's a really brave move that you took to stay away from the actual delivery or implementation of tactics, because then all you get known for is you're basically as good as the last project that you delivered. Whereas actually removing yourself from that and staying in the strategy level, you are able to elongate those relationships, but you're known as an authority rather than as a delivery method. Is that the way you've experienced it?
Absolutely. As I'm listening to you, I'm thinking, yeah, I'm ticking all those boxes. And importantly, going back to what I said earlier, it also moves swifter. So if some of your listeners are at the beginning of shaping their model and their personal brand and so on, it feels counterintuitive to narrow your offering. And it feels counterintuitive to also say no to a bunch, because you know in your mind you go, well, I'm going to lose money if I do that. And the opposite has been true. If anything, at the very the first or 2 years of my consultancy, because I had quite a bit of free time, which is very dangerous, I would accept all sort of meetings. I would accept invitation to partner up with another consultant and agencies, and all these were a waste of time. A waste of time in terms of away from what you are kind of crafting, what you're shaping for your business. So if for some of your listeners, if I could invite you kindly to politely decline all those offers for the coffee, the meeting, the partnership arrangement, and so on, because they don't work. More importantly, they take you away from what you should be doing at this very moment in time.
Yeah, and I think that is one of the key things that people starting out on this journey don't appreciate from the word go, is that time is the most valuable currency that you have. And putting yourselves in those, you know, I've been there, I've done it where, you know, you get, somebody wants to invite you for a coffee, they want to have a chat about these, you know, the services that they can help you with, this, that, and the other. And you think, oh, it'll only take an hour. And, you know, but the reality of it is that those people aren't in it for what's going to help you. They're in it for what's going to help them, because it's their business and that's their right to do it. But actually, if you need to stay laser focused on what you are trying to achieve, and if it doesn't fit within the realm of where is this going to get me in the next hour, then don't go and do it. That's as simple as it gets in my book anyway.
Absolutely. And I think, don't get me wrong, I did accept those invitations to begin with because it's very flattering. It's also, well, I've got the time, what the hell. But every hour or half a day or day that you spend with those encounters leading nowhere is time taken away from building your brand. So that one day could have been spent writing blogs. That 1 hour could have been spent actually crafting a new methodology or matrix that can help you, deliver a better service for your clients. So I'm not saying that I have regrets, because I've learned from that, which is why I was saying to you earlier, it's now so easy for me to say no, because I know where this leads from experience. And I'm now, sometime I can see people tweeting or on LinkedIn, oh, I had a great time here, I still get invitations, and I turn them down. I see the notification that they were together that afternoon or that day, I smile thinking, well, I'm sure it was lovely, but I have no doubt I'm going to meet you in 6 months time, and you will tell me that it was a waste of time.
I agree. And you know what? That's actually one of the things last year, during 2018, I actually made a conscious effort to say, you know what? I am going to say no to those things, and I am going to spend more time and actually a bit more money going to some organized events, because they will help me meet people, but they will also help me grow my business, so I can do two things at the same time rather than potentially investing in one and it doing nothing for me. Does that was the way I looked at it, rightly or wrongly, anyway.
Sure, no, and I did the same. So, we're going to be teaching each other to Sir Kegs here, but, you know, you would profile your ideal customers and then ask yourself the questions, you know, where do they go for their professional development? Where do they go for any of their networking and so on? And you've got to be there. And a good thing about doing so, you'll be, you know, that only fish in that big pond. You might be the only marketer in that networking event for manufacturing businesses. You might be the only online digital consultant at that, you know, CPD event organized by such and such institute. And now it's very unnerving, because you're going to be in a room full of strangers, I get that, or you might be invited to speak at an event where you really don't understand the sector that well, but mark my words, that's going to do more to your business than 10 times the coffees with the well-intentioned individuals out there.
Yeah, there is a lot of nice coffee, but you can drink it in the comfort of your own office. So, I mean, just to sort of bring this element to a sort of natural, I suppose, conclusion, because there's something else I want to talk to you about. But
okay.
you still practice this, because you actually mentioned this just in the sort of pre-chat we were having. You know, you don't have your own podcast, which, to a lot of people in our space, obviously I do, I'm asking you the questions, but a lot of people in our space do that, yet you have made the decision to not do that because you've decided to do something else. So you're still actually practicing what you preach even now.
Yeah, it's not easy, I'll tell you that. But when I made the decision to be known as the go-to authority for video marketing, if I may say so humbly, mm-hmm. I felt that I had to behave in that way. But also, I thought, well, if I then do a podcast, what is left for pleasure? What is left for me to consume that doesn't feel like work? Mm-hmm. And this is back to this idea of being a little selfish and easy to say no, which is that I break all my rules because video and filmmaking was my passion and I didn't want it to become work, but the internet conspired, Pete. You know, I mean, when you saw what's happened with the way in which we watch consume video content on yep. mobile phones and so on, it was I gave in, you know, I said, all right, then I'll talk about film and video and help you do better content from 2013 onwards. So I then let go of that one thing. So I thought, well, if I'm going to be looking at podcasts, I want to be a consumer. I want to enjoy that. I don't want to be a creator. Now, what I can do from a marketing point of view, I'm happy to be a guest and therefore ticking the box in terms of using podcasts to market my brand and my business. So that's why I was more than happy to use and to accept your invitation. And I will return the favor by having you as a video guest, of course, Pete.
Thank
but
you.
So to me, it was just one of those where I know that I'm losing out on distribution. Because you know the numbers, and a podcast will be distributed more widely and listened more easily because you can use them as I do in a car, sometime if I'm in bed or, you know, if I'm kind of allegedly multitasking, not sure I can, but, you know, podcasting, blogging and washing the dishes and so on. But I wanted to do something for me that would help me refuel. Because when we do the work that we do, you, I, and all our listeners, we expend a lot of energy, a lot of our kind of creative flair that week. And I thought, well, what's left for me to refuel and re-energize? And therefore, podcasting is for me. I'm just being very selfish. I want to listen to them. I want to enjoy them. I want to praise and applaud the creators. And from time to time, I'll be a guest because it's good for the ego.
Well, you know, it's great to have you on the show, and I think you've certainly set a good set of boundaries and ground rules, and I think the thing that's inspirational about that is I say this about a number of people. You know, when you look at the people like the Chris Duckers or the Gary V's or yep. the Troy Deans, and you see everything that they do, people often think that, you know what, it's easy for them because they're 15 years down the line and they've got everything lined up and they've got a team behind them. And where the heck do I start? But actually, what's inspirational about your story is you're saying, well, it's easy where to start. You say no to a whole load of stuff and that gives you the time and the structure to get on with the bits that are actually going to make the difference. And I think there's a lot that can be taken away from that as people are starting their own business, but even people that are in their own business and hopefully are nodding along in the car right now saying, yeah, I do all of that.
Yeah, and that's a lovely way to summarize. You obviously have a knack for summarizing key points like this.
Thank you.
I would want to address people like you and I who have been now trading for 10 years onwards. Mm. One thing that could be quite brave 2019 is to also stop doing something that you're currently doing. So we spoke about saying no to something that would be brand new that you've not started yet. But on occasion, with my customers, I said, you know what? I think you're doing a bit too much. Why don't you just stop a couple of those things? And that energy and that time can be then reallocated into those other areas where you're going to get more value. Because ultimately, there's only so much you can do. There's only so much you can enjoy. But back to my earlier point, Pete, what's left for you? I mean, if it's all of it is now work, if all of it has become the content marketing bit, what are you left with to be able to relax, enjoy, and so on and so forth? Because then I've got a friend now who's writing a book. Say, brilliant. So now you're going to be writing books, which means you're going to hate reading books because you're going to be sick of it. And then what are you left with? It's probably not what's going to happen, but that's probably more me, you know, right? Because I'm not much of a copywriter. But my view would be that when you decide to run your own business, as much as you're going to be working hard to be kind to your customers, what are you doing to be kind to yourselves? Because if you or I were employed, our employer would be actually looking at ways to take things off and make sure that we didn't burn ourselves out or didn't do all the hours yep. that we do. So you've got to try and find a way to talk to yourself and almost say, right, Pete or Pascal, you're doing a lot here. but what are you doing to, again, refuel that tank? And if there's nothing on that list of, well, this is what I do to refuel, then be careful, because burnout, which mine was, I had two, 2006, 2009, and it's not pleasant. I don't know if you had that unfortunate experience, but it's not much fun at all.
No, thankfully I've been able to circumnavigate those kind of things. Although I must admit, I was headhunted for a job once because one of the senior directors was essentially in the same place. He was burnt out, and he'd had some bad news at home, and you know what? He just needed to be taken out of the business for 6 months, and that was why they got me in, because they needed somebody to fulfill his shoes yesterday, and that was why I got the job. So that is brilliant. So if we can just move the conversation on a little bit, you've obviously mentioned video marketing a number of times.
Did I?
And just once or twice. but you've mentioned video marketing, and one of the conversations that we have a number of times in our Facebook group, and people message me about, is that the internet is moving. A large portion of internet traffic is moving towards video marketing. However, as a consultant, as somebody that's dealing with clients day in, day out, it sort of seems like there's a technical boundary. It seems like that sort of unreachable thing. So what is the best place to start with video marketing? How do you sort of package it to put to clients? How do you handle those discussions if you can't necessarily deliver video marketing yourself? What's the best place to start when you're actually starting to look into this thing?
Okay, so you're asking the question from the point of view of me advising one of my clients to jump onto video marketing. So what I've learned over the years is that your own enthusiasm about a subject like video will be matched by the equal level of fear in terms of your clients listening to you. So what you need to be very, very careful is not to assume that what you find fascinating, interesting, or easy to do, the same feelings are on the other side of the table. Yeah. What I've learned over time is to flip it and not call it video marketing anymore. I call this video customer service. And right. As soon as you change the language, you can look at the body language. I would ask some of your listeners to try it out and look at the body language, from cross arms, across the chest, to people leaning back, to someone leaning forward and saying, "Tell me more what you mean by video customer service." So what I try and do is explain that, A, this is obviously a long march, not a sprint. So video marketing as part of someone's strategy takes a long time to put in place, as in months, 6 months, 12 months. So don't rush in, even though the numbers and the stats and well-intentioned vloggers on YouTube will tell you that you're missing out on the seven-figure business. Let's not go there. This is very dangerous.
As they stand next to the Ferrari they've hired for the day in order to make the video. I've seen them too.
Because I have to tell you, I hope you don't mind, but if I knew how to make a seven-figure business from video, I wouldn't tell you, Pete. I would keep it to myself.
That's the rest of my show gone.
So we talk about video customer service, and I said, "Do you believe that customer service is a sure way to win more customers or retain customers?" "Yes, we do." So you go through this idea of you can't argue against the logic of good customer service. And what I said to them is, this is essentially how we're going to start. You, as I'm addressing the customer, do you think it would be seen as a good service if from time to time you came across a good video, like a TED talk or a good tutorial or a good demonstration on a product that you know for a fact your customers need to know about, perhaps not yours? Do you think it would be helpful to send the link to say, "Hey, Johnny," or "Hey, Pete, I came across this today. I thought you might find it helpful." Yeah, people agree around the table that would be helpful. I say, "All right then, so how about then if you were to save that video for future?" So let's say that TED talk or that demonstration or that interview, that Q&A is helpful. You send it to one person, but what about tomorrow? What about next week, next month? And they say, "Yeah, that would be helpful." Say, "Well, how about then you were to save that video on your own YouTube channel? And that channel becomes the ultimate library that you are responsible for. And that YouTube channel is compiled in terms of the content for customer service. And then you promote the hell out of it." And what you're doing here suddenly is turn the customer around, thinking, "So you mean that I'm going to be useful. I'm going to build my reputation, my brand as a good bunch of guys by curating someone else's content? The answer is yes. When do we begin? So then where you end up in a situation where video becomes the friend, not the enemy. And in their effort to curate, they're going to have to watch the stuff. Obviously, that's important. And sometimes what we do is not only do we share either on social media, here's a great, you know, TED talk, if I may use the example again, or here's a great tutorial. We then also, on occasion, for the better one, we embed them on a blog post. Mm-hmm. And we may have, for example, a blog post say, on the subject of this particular challenge, we came across those 2, 3, 4, 5 videos on YouTube. So here they are again as a bit of compendium. You can top and tail, obviously, the article and then promote the hell out of this blog post. And little by little, you start to make video content very present within your own client's marketing effort. So mm-hmm. then when you say to them, I think it's now time for you to do your own stuff. What do you think? They're ready. They're not going to challenge you because they've seen the evidence, increase in traffic, increase in reputation. And often what you'll find as well, the authors of those videos, they're going to know that you're curating because you're being good enough to tag them, or they're going to know because someone has mentioned them. They're going to reach out. They're going to say, hey, Pete, I understand that you'd be mentioning my video in one of your courses, or you mentioned it in one of your blog posts and so on. Really appreciate that. And then you can turn it around and say, no problem at all. How about I invite you as a guest and we continue this conversation from your tutorial. And then you enter onto the next stage. From video curation, you go into video co-creation. Mm-hmm. Because this is nowhere near as scary as being the author of your own video content. People still think that we want to go for the monologues. And now you end up in a situation where someone that you respect already, someone whose videos you watch for a while, becomes your guest and you're chatting. And we are all, I would argue, hopefully that's the case with today's interview, we are all, I would argue, at our best in conversation mode. And I'm actually quite strict with my customers. I actually ask them not to go for the monologue video for a very long time. And that co-creation is great because, by the way, not only do you get a guest and are seen to be well connected and impress your audience, but when the video is finished, what are they going to do? But promote the hell out of it. So not only do you get a video being created, you also get distribution, which has also has been the biggest challenge. And then after co-creation, you might want to go solo. But you know what? Some of my customers, I found co-creation so enjoyable, they stayed with it. And that's not really hurting their brand, far from it. So that's essentially been the approach for the last four or five years now, I would say, Pete. And as you can tell from the way in which I'm telling the story, it's done wonders. Before that, I was the technician. I was trying to teach people what I knew about video, and it was only working for some that were already on their way. But for people who, frankly, I'm thinking about, you know, our listeners whose customers are not from a marketing background, this is asking too much. Let's be honest with them. So let's just break it up for them. Video customer service is the label that I would use in those meetings, and see how that helps you out.
That's a really great sort of practical approach to it. So thank you for breaking it down so succinctly.
Pleasure.
The way that you've sort of explained it is almost exactly the reason that I started a podcast, to be honest. Because, and you know, I just to divert for a quick second, the third podcast episode I launched was episode 000. So the third episode I recorded, I should say. So I launched the podcast with 3 episodes. 2 that were interviews with people, that like just exactly as we're doing them now, and then the third one I recorded was 000. That was a sort of introduction just from me, and I sat in my office and I wrote some notes in Evernote, and then I opened iMovie to record the audio, and I hit record. And then a minute and 20 seconds later, I finished saying everything that I'd written down, and I had no idea what to do and thought, right, that's going straight in the bin. So you're dead right. Doing that solo thing when you're not prepared for it and you're not used to the delivery, you're not used to the, with podcasting, it's all to do with your voice. So you're not used to the intonations in your voice and how to make points without using your hands and all of that kind of stuff. When you just sit there and say, talk, go, it is the long 3 minutes is the longest time in the world. But as you slowly and surely, we're 54, 55 episodes in now, slowly but surely you start to get more confident and you start to not worry so much about what, you know, how things come out, what they're going to sound like, because at the end of the day, you can always edit them out. Nobody else has to hear them. And, you know, you just start to build this confidence and become more and more comfortable with it. It's not being cocky with it, it's just being comfortable with it. And then you're in the position to start talking to slightly more professional people like yourself, like, you know, the Chris Duckers of the world or whoever it might be that do this every day, and off you go. So it's the way you've explained it with video is almost exactly the same testimony I've got to how podcasting's worked for me.
Fascinating.
It's just like, yeah. I chose podcasting instead of video. That was what
sure.
it came down
no,
to.
No, absolutely right. And I would encourage you, if that's right for you, to continue with the podcasting, because I think what you've achieved so far is brilliant. And video can be part of your world, of your marketing effort, mm-hmm. but again, more maybe as a guest or as a curator and so on. And because ultimately, we can't do everything at the same time. And who knows, you may have found your thing around podcasting. And more importantly, for me as a consumer, if you stop doing podcasting, move on to video, then I'm going to lose out, you know. So you also kind of, now that you have an audience, that's true though, isn't it? I mean, you kind of think, wow, I'm going to do this video marketing thing because I read some ebooks about it and it tells me that the stats are really quite good. And you kind of think, well, that shouldn't be the only motivation. A, you know, are you enjoying it? What is the audience that you've gathered over time? Because one thing that I know for a fact is that a podcast audience is not the same as a video audience. Mm. You can't carry the dough over. So I've got some pals who have tried to kind of move between the two media, and it hasn't worked. And I thought, well, it's a bit like asking someone who goes to the movie to suddenly change what they're doing and go to the opera. You know, it sounds on paper that it's the same thing, it's entertainment, but it's a different experience altogether. And you've got to be respectful of the audience. But one thing I would say, though, I'm rather annoyed that you invited Chris before me, but you know, I'll let you know.
that was one of those interviews. I don't often get nervous before these things, but I was a little nervous with interviewing Chris, and he came on, and we were recording in the middle of the afternoon, and the first thing he said in the sort of pre-chat was, look, I was supposed to have a delivery this morning and it hasn't arrived. So it may be that it arrives during the recording, in which case I've just got to go sign for it, but it's going to take a couple of minutes. We'll have to stop what we're doing. And okay, fine. So we did our intro just as we did earlier on today, and he was answering the very first question. Oh. And he said, Pete, I'm sorry, I'm going to have to go. My whiteboard has arrived. It's just pulling. The van is pulling into the drive. So I just had to sit and wait. And actually, you know what? We had a great laugh about it. He told me all about this whiteboard. I do have it recorded somewhere because we'd started the recording, so it did record it. I chopped it out of the final show, and but just that happening, just realizing that Chris Ducker is the normal bloke that has to take deliveries from the front door, it just calmed the whole thing.
And Chris Ducker will not be able to put that whiteboard up because he's rubbish at DIY as well, I'm sure.
You know what? I saw him a couple of weeks ago. I had to pick him up. We were at a conference in Wellingborough a couple of weeks ago, uh-huh. and he'd come up. He'd come up on the train or something. So anyway, I was asked if I could just go and collect him and bring him to the venue. So he and Urs were there, his wife, and I asked him about the whiteboard, and he said exactly that. He said, "Oh, you know what? I've got to go back home tomorrow because the guy's coming to put it up for me."
See, I know my boy, you know. But I'm sure he was a great guest. He likes to, as you know all too well, he likes to help people out and share what he's learned over the years.
Yeah, he was brilliant. He was the consummate professional as he is, and I'm looking forward to. I'm booked in for Upreneur again this year, so I'm looking forward to being there.
Excellent.
And are you going to that one?
I'm talking at that one this year. Finally, he managed to. Well, you know, he called in the friendship thing, you know, and. So we're going to have a blast. I'm going to essentially share two things, you know, my passion for filmmaking and building a brand. So we'll see where that takes us.
Fantastic. Well, look, we'll definitely have to meet up for a beer.
Will do.
When we get there. So Pascal, before you go, if people want to find you online, what's the best place for them to track you down?
So they can do two things. They can literally look on Google and type in Pascal Fintoni, F-I-N-T-O-N-I, because with a name like mine, you can't hide anywhere. As one, you know, luckily I'm not called John Smith, so easy to find. And then there'll be a list of the website and the social media and so on. So I would love, if that's okay, Pete, to people, you know, if you have any more questions about building that consultancy business, do get in touch. This is good therapy for me.
Absolutely.
And if some people who are listening to the show, you including Pete, would like to try out video marketing or video co-creation as a guest on some of the video kind of Q&As that I do, let me know. It'd be a pleasure to show you the ropes and show you how it can work, because that could be something that you then use for your own customers as well.
I would certainly love, personally, to see how that works. Just from a purely selfish point of view, I'm going to be selfish now. I would love to see how that works, even just from the sort of technical side of how does this thing work? Because I'm a bit of a geek when it comes to the side of things. You know, I like to get my hands on something and get dirty with it. So I'd be well up for that. And I'm sure if anybody else listening wants to get in touch, they'll do so as well.
Super.
So thanks for your time, Pascal. I've really really appreciated talking to you. It's been a blast.
Yes.
And guys, as you're listening, if you do want to give up something for 2019 to free up that time and add some value to your business, I'd love to know what it is in our Facebook group at peteeverett.com/group. Drop it in there and I'll invite Pascal into the group as well so that he can see what you come up with.
Oh, I love it. Thank you.
Brilliant. Cheers. Speak to you soon, Pascal.
Bye.
So there you have it, another episode in the can. Show notes from this episode can be found at peteeverett.com/054. And Pascal, I really, really loved the way that you started and broke down the process for introducing video marketing both into our own work and into the work of our clients. I think we've all really got something valuable to take away from this. Don't forget, you can join our Facebook group at peteeverett.com/group and the Marketing Development Academy SEO course. The doors are still open, so go and check that out at marketingdevelopment.academy. We'll see you next week.